Good evening.
Wow.
Good evening. And welcome to the regularly scheduled November 1st meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed one student personnel item, a stipulated expulsion. We discussed anticipated litigation, one case, the PG&E application number 16-08-006. We conferred with our labor negotiators regarding the employee organizations, confidential employees, CSEA, MEC, SEIU, and SLCTA. And we conferred with our labor negotiators regarding unrepresented employees, the superintendent, and assistant superintendents. So it was discussion only, no action was taken. And I am seeking a motion on the student personnel matter.
I'll move the stipulated expulsion.
So I have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is this a roll call vote, Mrs. Holmes? Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That passes 7-0. Do we have consensus on the order of business? I'm seeking approval of the minutes of 10-4 and 10-18.
I'll move approval of the minutes of October 4th.
Okay, so I have a motion for October 4th. I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0.
I'll move approval of the minutes of October 18th.
Okay.
Ellen, did you second that?
Okay, so I have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have 6 ayes and one abstention due to absence. Next, we have our student representatives to the board. I'll go in reverse order. From Morro Bay High School, we have Michelle Morosen.
So for ASB yesterday, we held the annual fall costume contest, and winners were giving pumpkins to carve. And coming up, ASB is hosting a school-wide talent show, and sign-ups were put up yesterday, and we already have 28 individual and group acts have joined up for tryouts, and tryouts will be held on 7th and 8th in the Lemodector room at lunch. For sports, last week, we had senior night, and all senior varsity sports players were formally recognized for their dedication. Water polo had prelims today at Lompoc Aquatic Center, and varsity finals are on Thursday, and cross-country finals are on Wednesday. And varsity volleyball went to L.A. today for playoffs, and they're also coming up this week. And for winter sports are beginning, and girls' soccer tryouts were held today and throughout the week, and also basketball and girls' water polo. The Morro Bay FFA held their yearly pumpkin carving contest, and 23 teams of students carved pumpkins, competing to win tickets to local haunted house and mazes. And this Thursday, they're also hosting the annual barbecue. For music, Loams and Morro Bay High, their music boosters are hosting their fundraiser that They're going to be selling trees and poinsettia. And for social science, on this Thursday, the U.S. history and government classes are having a rock the vote during a lunch activity where they will have a booth for different propositions and students can interact and inform themselves of all topics. And also, the social studies hall will have an set up for election day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I say something?
Mr. Unger.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that the Christmas trees from Morro Bay High School are the most beautiful Christmas trees. So get your Christmas trees from them.
Thank you. And I think they deliver it to your houses, too, instead of picking them up.
Okay, I can attest. It's been 5 or 6 years, I think, I've had a Morro Bay High School tree, and they are beautiful. The nobles are gorgeous. If there's no other comment, then we'll move on to Carol Pettiholm from Caroline, I beg your pardon.
It's okay.
Caroline Pettiholm from San Luis Obispo High School.
Hello. So in San Luis Obispo High School sports news, this Friday is our senior night for football, so varsity seniors will be recognized. We also have our water polo league finals today, and I believe also on Wednesday. So the boys had 2 games today, and I believe they won their first game, and their second game's going on right now. So hopefully they do good. For girls golf, we had our league final championship last week, and we won first place in league, so that was great. And then we headed down to LA, I believe, to compete in CIF, and I think we did pretty good down there as well. Girls tennis competes tomorrow for their CIF championship, and Powder Puff has been postponed to tomorrow night, so come out and support the freshman sophomore game and junior senior game. For drama, the play Arsenic and Old Lace went on last week, and I believe we had a lot of ticket sales and a lot of people came to watch and support the drama club, so that was good. And the closing night was on Saturday, so unfortunately it's over, but there will be a new play in the spring. In choir, there's going to be a fundraiser tonight from 5 to 10 at Blaze Pizza. And they support, or that Blaze is giving 20% of the proceeds that you buy your pizza to the choir for Slow High to fund buses and a lot of the trips that they go on for their concerts. Also, their first concert is November 3rd at the First United Methodist Church this Thursday. In FFA news, the National FFA Speaking Competition went to Nationals this past weekend during our homecoming weekend. Lily Steele placed second in the nation for public speaking, and our novice Parley Pro team came in first for public speaking and second for debate. Nationals, yes. So the past 5 years, Slow High has been, or past 4 out of the 5 years that we've gone to the national level, Slow High has represented California, so that's, our FFA is doing pretty well for speaking. And also in ASB news, our homecoming week has finished up. So it's pretty good. We had a pretty good turnout for our dance. It's always our biggest dance. So we had about 400 to 500 students attend. The rally also went well and the parade went smoothly. And this past Thursday, we had an open mic where a bunch of staff and students came out and showed their talents to the students during lunch. So that's it for Slow High. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any board comment? Okay, seeing none, we thank you both for coming tonight. We always appreciate hearing what's going on at the high schools. You're welcome to stay and listen to the topics, and we'd love to have your input, but we're also mindful that you have many other things that you're involved in, and so you may feel free to leave at any time with our thanks. Let's see. Under correspondence, at the time the agenda was published, we had received only a CSBA memo calling for nominations to the Delegate Assembly. And I don't know if we intend to act on that or not, as we have. Mark Buckman is our representative, and I believe his term is through 2018.
I would actually hope that we do act on this, we should be receiving, I'm guessing, Kim, nominations from people within the rest of the county, because there's one other county seat available. So, and we do represent all the boards.
Okay, so then how then would the board receive information about who...
This notification from CSBA is your alert, so you want to start thinking about that now and perhaps in an advance agenda. If you're not prepared to think about that tonight, maybe at the next meeting you'll be able to come forward with a name that we could prepare a nomination form for to have you make take an action on at a future meeting. We can submit that to CSBA.
Okay.
They're not due until January, but we do have only the one meeting in December before that deadline. So we only have two more opportunities to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes,
and
Mr. Roger.
We don't have to nominate someone from our board. We can nominate someone from another board as well, if that's our choice.
That is true. The two representatives from the area now, Mark, correct me, Meager? Vicki Maher,
yeah.
Her term is up in January.
Right.
So that's the seat that will need to be filled, either by her re-election or with a new delegate, and I'm not sure what her intention is. I can follow up, if you like, with Atascadero and see if she's interested in continuing to serve.
She is.
Yeah, she's with Lucia Maher, and I believe she's running unopposed this year.
Okay, if you would follow up, Mrs. Holmes...
I would. I'm just wondering if we, since we have our two CSBA delegates and we know that she is interested in continuing.
Oh, is that what Ms. Drunger said?
She would need to be nominated by a member board, and there's a vote in, I think,
and
January,
often
February.
Multiple boards nominate the same person. So if you are in favor of her continuing and you want to simply put that name forward, then I'll bring an agenda item to you at our next meeting.
Okay,
for that nomination.
Okay. I thought when you said she was running unopposed, I thought you meant for re-election to her own board.
Correct. That's my understanding.
But she's indicated to you that she's interested in
delegate? I have not talked to her about that. I'm assuming she is, we would want to check, obviously.
Okay, then I will follow up with Lucy Maher and see what her intention is about the delegate assembly.
Okay, thank you. We have reached item 6.02, which is public comment. It doesn't appear that Dr. Eisendrath Rogers has received any written requests to speak. Is there anyone in attendance tonight who would like to address the board in public comment? Seeing none, then, we'll move on. Superintendent's updates. Business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just a couple of quick items. One is the initial property tax. Assessment has come out from the auditor's office, and so secured taxes, it looks like, are up 5.5%, which was, positive thing for us as a basic aid school district in terms of property taxes. But we're also seeing our first kind of reduction in unitary tax revenue with the, kind of depreciation of the Diablo nuclear power plant. So with that $500,000 deduction in property taxes, we're down to about 3.89%, which is still good. It's a positive step for us, and so we get the official number mid-month in November. So as soon as I find out what the official number is, I'll share that with you. As you might have heard, and was in KSBY yesterday, we had a little issue with a donation project that happened, some batting cages at Slow High, and so we're addressing that, taking care of it with all the groups. But the reason why I bring it up to the board is we are going. I have taken some steps to really make sure that proper protocols are in place, one for both receiving donation dollars as well as before projects are started, that all the proper planning and details are taken care of before those, so that if there are any issues or dilemmas that we face in the future, that we're catching those before they happen. So I just wanted to let the board know that.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I don't see any board comment. Educational services update.
I would like just to speak to the board just really quickly about some public outreach and public forums we're doing to gather interests, sort of harvest interests, and get feedback regarding what the community, staff, parents are most concerned about regarding the closure of Diablo Canyon. nuclear power plant and its impact on our district. So I just wanted to let you know that we held on October 26th our first public forum at Laguna Middle School, and it was fairly well attended. I imagine there was around 50 people that came, about 25 speakers came forward, shared some really good feedback, and we're collecting all those comments. We're going to have our next meeting at Los Osos Middle School tomorrow night, 6 to 8 o'clock, or 6 to whenever we finish. And then the week after, on November 9th, we'll have our forum at Del Mar Elementary in Morro Bay. So we're hitting each of our major constituent communities. On November 16th, you can see the Wednesday theme. The following Wednesday after that, we'll be meeting with our union leadership up here at the district office to gather their interests and feedback as well. We will circle back with that information to the local leaders group that was established. We met initially on October 19th to talk about the same concerns, issues, and we began to frame out common themes. And these public forums that we're having will align more than likely to those themes. And we'll circle back on November 16th with our local leaders group and solidify those comments and begin to make sense of what we heard and see what are those big, critical, key messages. And so from there, we'll compile the public comments and the local leader comments, and we'll come into January with some hopeful, thoughtful recommendations and begin to move forward as a district. So more information will come your way, and I will look forward to keeping you posted. And that's it for tonight.
Okay, thank you. The next item is Measure D update. Again, I believe Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, we have some key updates tonight that actually in the board meeting in terms of three big projects that are going to be underway. And so it's very exciting for us to kind of get these big projects started. I just got a couple of shots today of the new auto shop at Morro Bay High School. So we took the old bus barn and cleaned it up and fixed it up, and it is absolutely beautiful. So it turned out very, very nice. And so I'm sure as we have an opportunity to visit Morro Bay High, we'll have a chance to get out there. So I don't want to show you the pictures yet because we're still waiting for a few of the Snap-on tools and chest and things to come in. So we're going to, once it's all set and ready to go, we'll get some nice shots to share with the board. But it's just been great to see everything that we've touched so far in terms of Measure D. It's really, really positive, good vibes, feelings from the sites. And so we're looking forward to that, of course, continuing in bigger and better projects as we proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Questmere.
Mr. Pinkerton, would it be possible that we'd have those photos by the 18th of this month to show at a board meeting?
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, I see no additional comment. Moving on to item 8.01, English Learner Program and Intervention Model Update. And that is presented by Mrs. Shields, I see, coming up.
Actually, I'm just the pregame show. Good evening,
and
board.
Dawn Addis.
It's my pleasure to introduce to you teacher on special assignment, Dawn Addis, who oversees both our English language development program as well as our various interventions in our districts. And because that is such a humongous task, we've asked her to give you some highlights of our current status for our English learners as well as things that are happening in our district in the area of intervention and then looking forward. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dawn.
Thank you for having me. Good to be back here. I'm going to jump right in because I have a lot of information, even though it's not comprehensive of our district. With our English Learner Program and our intervention model, I'm going to kind of go through four different guiding questions. I think you guys have heard them before. But first, thinking about what do we want students to learn in EL and an intervention? And then how do we assess progress in EL and intervention? What do we do if students continue to struggle even though they're in ELN intervention? And then finally, what happens when students advance in our programs for ELN intervention? So when we think about what we want students to learn in our EL program, you've heard me talk before about grade level content and the importance of keeping students in grade level instruction rather than pulling them out or having a watered down curriculum. In addition to that, we want students interacting with peers and adults. We want them interpreting things that they read and things that they view in English. And then, of course, we want them to produce oral and written language. So I have a couple of short videos to give you examples of this. And this first grade one is of two students in paired reading. And one of the exciting things about this is that the support for the English learner is really embedded in this paired reading activity because paired reading is part of our new reading units of study that we've adopted at elementary. So what you'll see is an English learner who's at the emergent level or the CELT level 2 who's using English to interact with his partner, who's having to interpret the feedback from his partner, and then who's also using English to read at a grade level, read a grade level text.
Maybe start over again. Hello, Hen. This picture is for grandmother. Try smoothing it out now. This picture is this. Hello, Hen. This picture is for grandmother. Hello, Hen. This picture is for grandmother. Good job.
So, super short example, but I wanted to show you because I think sometimes we wonder how an emergent English learner could be involved in grade level content. And so this is one way. And the fortunate thing is that we have curriculum that allows for that to happen in a very fluid way. So this video is of a middle school student who's at a bridging level or CELT level 4, who again is involved in a grade level discussion. But what the teacher has done is embedded the supports for all students by having academic language on the board for all kids to use in a discussion. And what you're going to hear is the teacher's going to ask the student a question, and he has some trouble getting started, but he's able to use the supports that are there on the board, and the teacher actually kind of points to them, and he can get started and get his thoughts out.
As you were noticing, and you're noticing the other people's words, I want to start seeing or kind of hearing about what you're thinking. Court, express, regret, express, acknowledge, disagree, want.
It seems to me that a few people didn't label their answers.
So again, just very briefly for you to see how that support was embedded and that student was able to grab onto the support that was on the board and then engage in that whole class discussion. So that's a snippet of what we want students to learn in the EL program. How we support this is through that language-rich curriculum, so the reading units of study, the writing units of study, our bridges, our CPM, and then, of course, the next-gen science that Tristan is helping to roll out is all very language-rich curriculum, and that is part of the beauty for our English learners is that because the curriculum itself is language rich, there's a lot of support built in for our students. And then, of course, the other thing to support this is teacher learning. And so last time I was in front of you, one of you asked me, how are teachers reacting to this focus on EL and the focus on EL supports? So I wanted to share with you some comments from a recent science day that Tristan led. And what we did differently is he kind of taught teachers about next-gen science standards and practices, and instead of me coming in as a separate entity to say, and here's EL, I kind of jumped in as he was teaching and said, okay, and here's how we would embed the support, and here's what we would do for our English learners. And so what teachers, we asked them then, of course, what's going well, what did you like about the day? And by and large, they talked about both the science and learning about the EL strategies. So they really reacted well to having it in tandem and seeing how EL can be embedded into the content. So what do we want students to learn in terms of intervention? Again, it's that grade level content, but it's also filling skills gaps. And this is how intervention is a little bit different from EL. We're really focused on what have students missed in the past and how can we support them now. So you guys have heard about LLI and the one-to-one reading intervention and reading support in the middle schools. What I wanted to highlight tonight was our math interventions. And one of the most exciting things I have to say that I've seen in my career is our Bridges intervention materials, because they're fully aligned with the core math curriculum for elementary and the materials look the same. So students can experience intervention within the classroom setting. They don't have to be pulled out because the materials look the same and they're aligned with the curriculum, so the kids can kind of look the same. And then the picture on the right are students at the middle school, high school level who are using an individualized math program called ST Math. And you can see the one on the left is doing multiplication, whereas the one on the right is doing division. So they're in the same class, but they're able to do the work that they need to do while the teacher roams and supports. And so how we're supporting what we want students to learn in intervention is by providing it in tandem and aligned with the core curriculum and the grade level content. So how are we assessing progress? There's a couple little updates here. The first one is in the EL program. You're all very familiar with CELT. And so in my role as the EL TOSA, I've taken over CELT and the coordination of CELT and the transition to LPAC. So you're going to hear that a lot more. I just wanted to mention it tonight. It's the English Language Proficiency Assessments of California. And by 2018, 2019, we will be done with CELT and fully enmeshed with LPAC. More exciting, though, is what we're doing in intervention, where we've extended the SRI, or the reading inventory, through eighth grade. So now at our middle schools, we have hard data for English teachers and other teachers around students' reading levels. And this was extremely well received by our English teachers. They were super happy to be able to get this data and use this assessment. And the way we're supporting this is through teacher learning and collaboration. So we've gone out, myself and Sandra Del Martini, the ELA TOSA, have gone out and met with English departments during TCT, not just to talk about data, but to talk about reading intervention and reading strategies and how they can use that data in their classrooms to support students who are struggling and how they can use that data to identify students for intervention. So it's a huge shift, I would say, for secondary teachers to be, as English teachers, to be invested in reading instruction, and it's been extremely positive. So when we think about students in EL and students in intervention and what happens if they still struggle, in EL we used to say, well, students just need more time. We'll just kind of keep them in our program and eventually they'll learn English. And what we're finding is that that's not really accurate. And so now we've developed an intervention plan for students who are close to reclassification but haven't quite gotten there yet. So what specifically will happen different for those students? And that's kind of a new thing as of this year. And then in intervention, we have this, what we call ongoing consideration. So we don't want students lingering in intervention year after year. It's if the intervention's not working, then what are our next steps or how do we support them? And we're doing this by really looking at data and what does the data tell us about where students need support or where students need help. So then what happens when students advance? And you're all familiar with RFEP for the EL program, right? So it's a huge celebration, and you've seen the RFEP data for SBAC. We're very happy with. So, of course, that's what happens for the EL program. And again, for students in intervention, we don't want them staying there if they're ready to exit. So we're trying to look at students systematically at the trimester, at the quarter, to see are these students ready to exit the intervention, and if so, what other options do we have for them? And how we're supporting this process is, one, through a student reclassification plan. So Reclassification in the past has really been a process through the state and a process that school officials or teachers control. We know what the criteria is, and then we tell kids, this is, you've met the criteria, congratulations. So we're really starting to initiate getting students involved in that plan. We call it the road to reclassification, where there can be a conversation between counselor and student or teacher and student to say, you're getting close to reclassification, here's the criteria, and then students can set goals and also talk about, here's the support I think I need in my English class or in my other classes. So it's exciting to get kids more involved in what's happening in their own education. And then for intervention, again, it's that ongoing consideration. Like, if a kid is ready to move out of intervention, we want that. We want to be constantly thinking about them. Are you ready yet? As opposed to leave you there for a full year, multiple years. So that was a lot of information. Just quick summary in terms of what we want students to learn. We really want our programs integrated, our EL program integrated, our intervention program linked to what's happening in the core classroom. We, in terms of what we're doing with assessment, we're really focusing on the updates with our SRI and how our teachers can use that at middle school, and then also that transition to LPAC from CELT. In terms of when students still struggle, we want to be much more targeted than perhaps in the past in terms of thinking about what's the plan for students if they still struggle and not letting them kind of linger in intervention. And then finally, when students advance, we want to be individualized about that and help students along the path towards moving forward in both EL and intervention. So with that, I will wrap up and see if there's questions or comments.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment on this presentation?
I'm going to give a PS to what I said at the beginning. I would be remiss if I did not remind the board that the work that Dawn does with our English learners and facilitating intervention programs is very much a part of our LCAP, represents both our LCAP focus area 2 about English learners, ELA, as well as focus area 4 under culture of care.
Okay. Is there Mr. Quesenberry?
I have a question about the students that are redesignated from EL and then also intervention. What is our current policy in sort of monitoring them once they've been redesignated? Do we have a kind of a consistent program for doing that?
Mm-hmm. So part of that is governed by Title III, right? So we monitor students for 2 years after they've been redesignated, and we have a systematic process for that where we ask school sites to consider SBAC data, to consider English classroom grades, and then also to consider teacher thinking around the student and any concerns they might have around reading, writing, speaking, or listening. And then from there to decide, should an intervention be put in place? And if so, what kind of intervention? So there's a list of sort of classroom-based strategies that teachers could use, as well as additional interventions like a reading class at a middle school level, or, you know, an after school, or, you know, different things like that.
Would teachers typically, and I'm talking, I kind of have that secondary perspective, but it doesn't matter whether it's elementary or secondary. Would they get a list of those students normally at the beginning of the year, especially the ones that have been redesignated? Much as we would get lists sometimes of students that, you know, have there's a health concern or that they're a resource student or what have you. Do they receive those lists like that?
So students are identified in PowerSchool,
okay.
Right? They're identified in PowerSchool, but we also have Illuminate, where teachers can pull up their class lists, and it shows them, you know, which student is EL, which student is RFEP, which student is IFEP, which student is English only. So there's all those designations as well that they can pull up by class section or by class list. And then when it comes time for RFEP monitoring, that information is delivered to them because we're on a specific timeline with that.
That's wonderful. I one other question, and this this goes to secondary counselors. I know they have a lot on their plate, but sometimes it's key to have them, you know, very aware of what's happening with EL students for that I know of for sure, and I'm sure with intervention students. What is their role in there in this, and how are they, let's say, how are they involved?
So some of the school sites have a designated EL counselor, but then also when we share our reports, like in Illuminate, there's a lot of data that we use and reports that we create to pull customized data, customized data around students to help counselors identify students that might need intervention or might need other kinds of support. And always in there, we designate who our students are that are English learners so that we can really be thinking critically around, does the student have a language-based need or a different kind of a need, so that counselors are very much involved in thinking about what is the specific need of those students.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Mrs. Sheffer.
I know that most of your talk here tonight was focused on the classroom setting, but I wanted to point out that over the years, and I know you've been instrumental in this, as has Mrs. Shields, the growth of our ELAC and DLAC participation has really grown, and kudos to you. I ran into Mr. Mayfield the other day, and he indicated they'd had their first ELAC meeting at Pacheco, and over 100 people attended. And I think that outreach and the holistic approach to the families, the safety net, and the support we give to families as a whole of these students is really wonderful. And thank you for your efforts in that area. I think it will pay off for the entire families, but particularly, of course, the kiddos, but the whole families are benefiting from involvement and deeper engagement in our schools. So thank you for that.
If I may?
Yes.
I want to acknowledge that. I think our DLAC is really a strong, positive, engaged group of parents that want to be there, want to be positive, want to be part of the solution. They come with lots of ideas. It's a great group. Donna's done a really lovely job of being their cheerleader and facilitating them. Her bilingual skills have just really opened the door to improving the communication. We had a member of the school board at our first meeting, and that was really awesome to have you there, Mr. Quisenberry. I believe we had about 26 parents there, as well as about 15 Cal Poly students from Dr. Delkus Camp's Cal Poly class. If I may, I wanted to also acknowledge or welcome Anna Massey, who is a part-time EL specialist out at Del Mar School, as well as a Del Mar parent, kind of new to our group, but part of that really support group for our early English learners. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Item 8.02, Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant Closure Impact Report Number 6. Mrs. McGrath.
Good evening. We have conducted a series of reports on the impact of Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, and tonight I would like to present report number 6. There we go. In the last presentation concerning the impact of Diablo Canyon, presented by Kristen Newland on salaries and working conditions, one of the conditions that was mentioned was low class sizes. This evening I will discuss class sizes. Because of the revenues from Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, we have been able to keep class sizes low. Tonight I will discuss our current class size district averages from transitional kindergarten through sixth grade, our middle school and high school ratios, and then also considerations for our transition, as we will need to raise class sizes. You're just going to click for me, Clem? Actually, if you'll back up one, that would be great. one forward. Perfect. Thank you. The first class size information I'd like to share are elementary class size averages for our district. In this chart, you will see that our youngest students have the smallest class size averages, and there is a gradual increase in the size of the class as you move higher within the elementary grades. These averages do not include special education classes in our calculations. Since our special education classes are typically much smaller, this would change the averages to a lower number, which this is the practice in other districts. We just feel that this gives a more accurate reflection of our practices within our district and the numbers that we want to consider. We've decided to share these averages without using our special education class numbers. All of our schools are staffed generously below our contracted agreements. However, you will notice in some of the upper grades, some of the numbers are higher. You can contribute this to the fact that site leaders and teachers are given discretion on how to utilize their site's allocation. We actually contemplated showing these averages compared to other school districts within our area. However, we find when looking at those numbers, it's very difficult to make equivalent comparisons. So we decided that just really wasn't great data for us to look at this evening, and so instead decided to look at our own numbers. As you can see, we have small class sizes, and we are proud that we've been able to hold these class sizes low, even below state requirements. Thanks, Kim. So for middle schools and high schools, we looked at it a little differently. Calculating the class size averages for middle schools and high schools is even trickier. As you can imagine, numbers vary greatly, right? When you begin to add elective programs, when you look at some small elective classes, some large elective classes, PE classes, et cetera, things just get a little more complicated. So in trying to give a method for comparing between schools, we looked at the total number of students and the number of classroom teachers. We considered the number of classes that students take along with the number of classes that teachers teach in order to determine an average ratio. We did remove things like counselors or athletic directors that, although they are certificated, they don't necessarily have a classroom of students. So these are the ratios that were calculated in looking at that in that direction. You do need to think about that in these calculations that would have special education teachers included since it's entire certificated classroom teachers. When looking at just the academic core areas of math, English, science, and social science, the average for high school classes is 27-1. Of course, you would find a variation from class to class, just like I spoke about. These are averages. And in addition, you will see large variations when looking from some small elective classes compared to large and small elective classes. You'll notice here that we have our average ratios in the 23, 24, 25 area, with Pack Beach being slightly different. Because of the revenues from Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, we have been able to staff middle schools and high schools generously as well. Thinking about a transition, we're going to be very strategic and gradual about this transition. We will have many conversations about how to maintain great programs while using attrition and retirements to minimize the impact on classes and programs. Part of our goal is also to minimize the impact of class sizes on our youngest learners. We have to begin strategically raising class sizes in order to align our revenues with our expenditures. But we do see this as a gradual transition over time. It's important to keep in mind that 85 to 90% of our expenditures are people. Increasing class sizes slowly and strategically will be one of our largest expenditure reductions. For example, to think about when one teacher retires at the end of their salary schedule, when you consider their entire package, this saves about $120,000 a year. Laying off a new employee would only save about half that amount. We will need to increase class size, but we will do so in a thoughtful, gradual manner that considers attrition and retirements and places a continued value on innovative programs and meeting the needs of our students. As we have ended all of our Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant impact reports, this is unfortunately that we need to currently make an $8 million budget reduction.
Per year.
Per year. forever. Any questions?
Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak to this item? Please.
I have a quick question. Are any other schools, do any other schools have different caps? Like, does Pacheco, you know, because I know that's factored in. Is there any differentiation there?
Can I answer? There's not. Elementary is considered all in one ratio. So 24 being the K through 3, and then 28 in our upper grades.
Sorry, I guess my clarification is, are there classrooms?
Could you identify yourself, please?
Sure. I'm Amy Higgins. I'm a parent over at Monarch Grove.
Thank you.
I guess my question is more that do they have different caps because, you know, you're bringing kids in differently. I'm just trying to kind of understand. Okay.
I'd like to address that.
Do you want to wrap up your answer to that question and then we'll have our next speaker, please?
Yeah, so to answer that question, do the other schools have caps or any other special schools? Our two alternative schools are Pacheco and Teach. And if anything, those schools have higher class proportions. We're able to accommodate parent requests in that manner. But typically classrooms at Pacheco and Teach are higher than the other schools.
Okay, thank you. If you would state your name, please.
My name is Julie Hitchcock, and I'm a parent. I also have a background in education as an educator, but tonight I'm here as a parent. I have two children at Del Mar Elementary who just started this year. I have a first grader and a fourth grader. And I'm looking forward to coming to some of these forums that you've been speaking of. So I really just wanted to tonight to just express on my behalf, though I hear it from other parents as well, that classroom size is still really a priority. That's something we'd really like to focus on. I understand it's a really complex issue, and I'm starting to educate myself on the allocation of funds and how all these decisions get made. My first grader is currently in a first grade classroom with 29 other students. And when I volunteer on Friday mornings, I just get to witness kind of the implications of these rising numbers in our public schools and what the implications are for the classroom teacher as she tries to instruct a class that big and that varied. Also, just the amount of bodies in a classroom, what that feels like when you have 29 first graders in a portable. And, of course, our students with special needs and their ability to attend and to glean what they need to in an environment that is highly distracting. So there's a lot of different factors that I could probably prepare more for, but I really just wanted to, I'm really excited that we're having these conversations. And so I really just as a parent wanted to stand up and say, you know, for me as a parent, I see many wonderful things happening in our schools, and our classroom sizes is probably one of my greatest concerns. My daughter in the fourth grade, they had 32, and I believe now they're at about 30. But again, not much room in a classroom for kids to even move about too much. So again, thank you for having these discussions.
Thank you. Is there board comment? Seeing none then, Mrs. McGrath, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Miller.
It's not so much for you. I just want to make sure the connection is understood between classroom size and the amount of money that it's required to maintain class sizes in the lower realm. And if we don't have the money, then we're going to have to make some adjustments. I know that staff has been thinking about this a lot and working on it, and we're certainly going to do whatever we can to mitigate the impacts, but there are going to be impacts, and I just didn't want that to sort of be missed in the discussion. And it's not because we don't value class size and the impacts on teachers. It's just that we're not going to have any choice.
Okay.
Can I make a comment? Surely. So just to kind of piggyback, I was going to save some of mine for tomorrow, but since it was raised, I think that the presentation from 2 weeks ago where we were talking about benefits and stuff was very positive and why it's important to retain, you know, teachers and how we get them here and how we, you know, attract people to this area. And I think as much as the salary is important, it's also the class sizes that matters. And I just feel like the energy surrounding this was that the decision has been made. And I feel like I am not alone when I say that it is probably the most important thing that gets me here and gets me to advocate for my children is the class sizes. And the board knows that I was here 2 years ago and had the same issue. And so I just feel like I just don't want that to be an automatic, because I felt like by this presentation, it's done and that it's not part of the discussion anymore. So thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Prater?
Yes, I'm completely conscious of what you're saying. So what I didn't want to do is mislead the public either. It would be disingenuous of me as a superintendent to say otherwise. The reality is $8 million in our general fund will no longer be there ongoing. And how we transition this is going to be the art form. There might be other mechanisms to increase revenue, but I can't count on that. I can't rely on that. In the meantime, we're being transparent and honest about it. And the honesty here is where our funding will likely be in 2025 will look very much like other school districts that are state-funded to the north and to the south of us. So when looking at those districts and looking at their class sizes, knowing that's where we're going. And I don't like it any more than you do. I have young children myself. I have a value on that, but like Mr. Millar said, there will be some very difficult choices, and class sizes is the most expensive cost we have. Nothing compares to the cost of keeping class sizes down. So we just have to be honest with one another, and I'm leading the charge on that. I don't like it either. Is there a creative way to address it? I'm trying my best to come up with that, which is why we're having public input and conversation.
And when we discuss class size and make comparisons, as people have done with me, comparisons against other districts in the county and elsewhere, it really has to be emphasized and understood that when other districts are reporting out, we don't know exactly what they're reporting out. If it's, you know, if they are including special education classes, which might have 6, 8, 10 students in a class, depending upon the severity of need, you know, that really skews the data for class size if you're taking an average.
Yeah, and the calculations are different depending on the district you compare yourself to. We could look really fantastic by including our special education numbers. But that would, again, not be a truthful analysis. I would also like to just mention that some classes in our district in the primary levels are higher. But I'll tell you, those are the exceptions, and those are also decisions that are made at the site level for good reason. And those decisions were made to avoid what the sites determined to be hopefully to avoid a combination class. And so when you see a first grade class with 29, I can tell you, if you look just to the right or to the left by grade level, you're going to see a much lower class size. And I believe at Del Mar there's a great example. A decision was made to avoid a 1-2 combo. In order for that to happen, first grade in that one class was raised to 29, so that the second grade class without a combo, I think, is at 20. So these are decisions that are site-based. These are things that we've done deliberately to empower our site administrators and staff. And sometimes it works out beautifully, and sometimes it is frustrating. And I understand it. But I want you to know it's a combination of events and complexities. But as of this year, and as far as we can in the future, we're going to try to keep those class sizes down.
Thank you. Mr. Quesenberry.
This is more of a question than a statement. It seems to me that the district provides something called a J90. Is that still true? Yes. Is it so specific that it gets down to class size? It does not. Just attendance in general and attendance at schools. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no additional comment, then we'll move on to item 8.03, Measure D, approve 100% construction document projects. And that would be?
So I'm actually going to defer to Mr. Palazzo to discuss the three projects that the board has in front of them. And again, really excited. These are kind of the three big main projects kind of out of the gate with Measure D. Though we've done a few smaller things, the tennis courts, a few projects here and there. So very excited about it. Kim, did you get that? So I'm at Madonna Inn having breakfast this weekend, and there's a beautiful book that Madonna Inn has. It talks about the life of the Madonnas. And so this picture was in that book. And so that is Alex Madonna, and that behind it is the annex building. And so and that is in the 100 building that you see today, which was probably knocked down, right?
That building's now no longer there.
But it's great because the new, I mean, for me anyways, and hopefully the board likes it, but the new annex building that you're going to see in a minute is like identical to that building. I was blown away at that it looked that way. So that building, of course, went through major modernization and changed to where it looked like recently when we saw it last year before it was demolished, right? But even the new plans for the main building kind of have a little bit of that theme in it. So it's just I was just super excited about the fact that we have little historical roots to it. So it was great to see this picture as we flip through the book, and I'll have Anthony talk about the three projects.
Do you know what year that picture?
You know what? I have no idea.
Well, that's a 1937 Chevy, yeah. So I know it's after 37.
He knows his cars.
And if anyone knows where that Chevy is, please let me know. There's a couple Palazzos that would love to get their hands on it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Millar.
Are we going to discuss these individually? Because I have to recuse on the very thing we're talking about.
Right? Yeah. So why don't we, if it's okay with the board, let's do the Slow High project as one approval, and then we'll do the two Morro Bay High projects as an approval. We'll start with the Slow High.
Okay.
Okay. So what you have in front of you here, and we'll try and go quickly through this, as I know you've seen this many times. If we could pull the annex drawings up, Kim, if you would please. So remember that picture that Ryan just showed. Okay. Ta-da! It's from the other side. Same building. It's as if they almost intended to do that. This is the annex classroom building. Now, what these are is an abbreviated set of plans. We did issue the full set, I believe, to the board, and we have the full sets available for public viewing in our office, and they're also at the back of the room this evening. We're still working out some of the technical difficulties of getting 100 megabyte files out into the ether, if you will. So as we work out some of those kinks, we will try and accommodate and meet all the letter of the law in terms of public notice, etc. I don't want to get too far into the weeds on this. However, this is a 12-classroom wing. It'll have interior corridors. We can go to the next page, Kim, if you would, please. Actually, that's the site plan. Let's stop right there. It'll be a little bit back closer to the property line than the former annex was. And so it'll line up kind of with the back of the gym, the old gym. It'll be about 25 feet off of the old gym. And it will have a much larger quad plaza area out in front of it. Oh, thank you very much. Won't look like I'm just speaking Italian there on the camera. So it'll have a much nicer expanded plaza area out in front of that classroom wing. Now you've got to envision this is 12 classrooms plus or minus 30 people per classroom with a teacher and some aides and some other kids on average. So you've got almost 400 people in coming in and out of this building every hour to 2 hours each day. So this is going to have a lot of activity and a lot of buzz going on in it. So to have a nice ample area out front is really key to making that building function as a classroom. So we can go to the next page. We'll show you the floor plan. So as you can see, we've got three classrooms here, three classrooms here, three classrooms here, and three classrooms here. 3 times 4 is 12. We've got some unisex restrooms here and then student restrooms, boys and girls, men's, women's restrooms there. We've also got some utility and storage closets down in the corner here. Everything is off of this interior corridor. All the classrooms enter into that. And then every room has exterior walls with windows for daylighting. So this is a very nice yet simple classroom space. The interior is planned to look like our model classrooms that we developed over the summer, so it'll be very similar in shape, form, and function to those rooms. So what you see there at the Building 500 we did over the last summer will look very much like these rooms ultimately. With that, I won't kind of go into any more. We could kind of, you know, think that these are more technical drawings that tell the story. There will be a little bit of tack board in each room. There'll be locations on each wall for a television monitor / screen. However, we'll probably only install one screen to start, but we'll have the ability to put that or multiple screens in certain rooms if needed on any wall that has the room for it. Obviously, we wouldn't necessarily put TVs there where the windows are. Excuse me. But we'll have whiteboards all around, very similar to the closets, just like model classroom.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
This is 12 classrooms. And
yes.
If I recall before, it was five, six. How many classrooms are we replacing with these?
The annex was just three plus the multipurpose room. So it was probably five legitimate classrooms could have been made out of that building. But yeah, we're gaining nine classrooms here in this space.
That's a big win.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Buckman, then throughout these presentations, Mr. Palazzo, I think since we don't really have a tendency to speak over one another, why don't people just question at will if you'd like?
Yeah, actually, I think I'm going to hold off on this question until the end, but it has to do with the energy efficiency and the DSA.
Okay.
But let me just hold off, though they're all presented. Thanks.
Okay.
I think we're gonna hopefully the board. So for this one, if we can just vote on this one. So if you have a question, probably now is probably the time would be for this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're seeking approval of these plans. They have been submitted to the DSA. We're expecting comments. We're expecting the review to begin in 2 weeks. They've accepted the project as complete. Now that doesn't mean that everything's perfect. It just means all the parts and pieces are there that they can begin their review. And we're expecting comments back first of the year. So hopefully by March, April, we'll have plan approval from the state architect's office, and we'll be ready to go out to bid and get underway next summer.
Okay. So I don't know, Mark, did you want to
I was going to make the motion.
Oh, please.
Perfect.
Unless
Thank
there's
you.
Others. I'd like to make the motion to approve the slow annex drawings that is submitted to DSA.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain. Abstentions? So we have 6 approval, 1 abstention. Mr. Millar.
Okay. Go on to the next one if we could, Ms. Holmes.
So one more comment just as we go. So part of this, too, is the overall plan of the kind of getting these projects completed at San Luis Obispo High School. Oh. So, of course, this critical 12-classroom building is really going to help us when we, and as well as the temporary housing that we put in place so that we can really displace a lot of the classes out of the big 100 building. So when we go to modernize that facility, we're going to need all of these classrooms to be available. So I just wanted to add that to
We're getting a delta of nine, positive delta of nine new classrooms. We're going to have 10 temporary classrooms at that site. So a delta of about 18 to 19 classrooms on the Slo-Hi campus, which is basically one half of the classroom wings at the 100 wing. So we'll have a lot of classrooms there for a short period of time while 100's open and all these are open.
So why don't we start with the J wing at Morro Bay High School?
Okay. So right behind it, going into DSA, was the J wing renovation, which is currently which right now currently this is the auto shop. If you could just scroll up a little bit, Kim, thank you very much. This is currently was the wrestling room as of 2 weeks ago. It's no longer the wrestling room. It's probably become some kind of storage room, so we need to get over there and clean it out as soon as we can. Lock, change the locks. This is currently the multimedia art and design, Liz Moore's former classroom. And this is kind of the it's actually the wood shop right now. This area up here, there's a little classroom and there's some restrooms here. So the concept here is to turn the J-Wing into kind of the STEAM Academy, the STEAM complex out at the Morro Bay High School. And we'll kind of talk a little bit about how this falls into the play with the dominoes. But the idea is that the ceramics lab, we're in the old auto shop now, hopefully by 1st of January, they'll be moving into their new auto shop. The equipment's slated to show up prior to the winter break and kind of get installed over that. Get them moved in over winter break, if not first of the year, and hopefully in January be teaching auto shop out of the new auto shop in the old bus barn. What we'll do is we'll renovate this half of the old auto shop into a ceramic studio. So we'll have indoor kilns, we'll have glaze room, we'll have drying rooms, we'll have pottery wheels, and then we'll actually, under that nice big canopy that's here, we'll actually have some outdoor space for some ability to work on the ceramics, some extra wheels, some hand building, etc. We'll have our fine art and graphic art side on drawing, painting, kind of your traditional art class will be right over on the other side here. And then right out front, this will be a gallery space. And one of the things that was really important in this program was to have the ability to allow this teach the students to showcase their work, not only do their work, but also to put up, put on little shows and have the ability to show how to show your work. So that was very important to the group here. And the idea was to give them plenty of storage so that didn't become the default storage space. The old wrestling wing, if you will, it was a huge space, will become kind of the multimedia art and design studio. And this is modeled after Santa Barbara High School's, what they call their MAD Academy, their Multimedia Art and Design Academy. It's computer graphics, it's movies, it's video, it's sound. So there's a big, large open space with computers and movable desks and countertops to have all of their high-powered computing going on. There's a green screen room for video production, so they can have their sets, their backdrops. They can do any of those kind of video productions or even stills if necessary in that room. There's a sound operating room in here. There's some office and some storage space here. And then there's actually a little portrait studio space in there as well. So it's kind of a very multifunctional use for kind of multimedia, for lack of a better term. This will become the Engineering Academy, Mr. Rapucci's room. So this will kind of be computer repair, engineering, kind of that all-inclusive classes that Mr. Rapucci teaches, which is, the kids just love. So this will become kind of his wide open space with nice polished concrete floors. He can make all the mess in the world in there and let the kids really get their hands dirty and have a great time and actually do a lot of learning as they do. And then this is kind of being reserved as our robotics studio. So again, having the ability to have the big roll-up doors, have a big wide open space, have a lot of little storage areas for the various things that they have, and then have the ability to just roll things out into that courtyard and be able to, throw watermelons across the field or whatever the robots are going to do. I'm generalizing, obviously. And then renovating this wing into student staff restrooms. So really getting more restroom space out on this end of the campus, which right now there's just really not a lot. So this will also be re-roofed. It's one of the things we fight with constantly. Last week, you know, got buckets everywhere there. So we'll re-roof that building. We will cinch up those skylights that are up there. The plan is to still maintain them, but maintain them in a little different configuration. So still allow the daylighting to come in, natural lighting, and, you know, reducing our need to keep lights turned on, but do them in a much more easily maintained manner. So that's the J wing.
Anthony, I'm wondering, when you talked about Mr. Rapucci's kind of madman area...
Well, I didn't say that.
Is that where metal shop will be as well?
No, so that's a good question. Thank you. That was a part I failed to go on. This will set up, this right here will set up kind of clearing out the building, the office building right now. So when we build this facility and we build the student services building, it just about allows us to clear out building B. So where the office and where Mr. Rapucci is temporarily, and the art and some of the ceramics lab, all of that, will, that building will almost be empty when this facility and the new student services is built, with hopefully with, you know, within 18 months of next summer. And then we can really start to renovate those classrooms. What we will do in one of the summer interims is move the wood shop and the metal shop.
Okay.
Currently, there's two metal shops in what we call Building D, which is the ag and the metal shop, kind of in the middle of campus next to the old gym. That'll become wood on one side, metal on the other side.
Okay.
For kind of general use for the campus as a whole.
Thank you.
Mr. Palazzo, I have a question.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned a canopy on the that would be the north side of the south side of
south
the building.
South side, yeah.
Is there not an existing canopy on the north side facing that interior area?
Yeah, this one's a little shallower, so not as good for, you know, it's about 8 feet, I think, or 10
right.
feet, so you can't get as much. This will still all remain and
okay.
be usable, but what we're actually doing is this is almost 20 feet, as I recollect, 15 to 20 feet. This will actually have fences around it, and it's actually a fairly more usable space. So the idea would be to be working on, whoops, I lost it again. Did I kill it? Anyway, to be working on the south side. It's just a bigger
okay.
canopy there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
There, I got it back. Okay. So if there's no other questions, we're seeking approval or if anybody's comments.
Let's go to the Student Sports Center. We'll
okay.
do both of them
we'll
all together.
At the same time. Okay. There it goes. Okay. All right. So this is the new front door to Morro Bay High School. This is the Student Support Center. And as we mentioned, you know, currently this is the B wing, or what we're referring to internally as the B wing. And this is where the office is right now. So there's the office component and the counseling. All of that takes up the better part of 3/4 of this building. Huge amount of footprint. It's very inefficient in terms of an office space. So the idea was to empty them from this space. And when you pull up here, you just really don't know where the office is. There's kind of two doors. There's two points of entry. Where do you go? So the idea is to make it very clear architecturally where the front door to the school is. And then again, it'll start to set up that fence, the ability to start fencing the campus off so that the only point of entry for visitors after school starts is kind of through that building. If we can go to the next page, if you will, it's the site plan. Scroll down just a little bit. Okay. This is the existing drive, and currently there's that big looped roadway that comes all the way around and comes back out. Okay, and there's kind of parking around there. That'll all go away. We'll be building the new Student Support Center right here, and we'll have a looped drop-off for student drop-off in the morning. Student parking will remain kind of in this area. Staff parking will kind of be down here and up this way. So between, and again, we've got plenty of parking on this campus as well, but between those kind of changes, that'll hopefully kind of get students going this way, parents going this way, and staff going completely different way, and kind of get those three functions happening separately. And then again, buses will still be to the west. Again, it's off the page, but over here where the current bus loop is, that'll be reconfigured as well in a future project. But again, the idea is a visitor coming here, you'll be able to park here. It'll be very evident where the front door is.
Anthony, we've discussed this at other meetings, mm-hmm. and I just want to make sure that everybody that's here and maybe people that are watching, there's going to be the ability to, once school starts, to close off this area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you want to take the time to show it, but I just wanted to really make sure that everybody understood that.
Yeah, the idea will be that there'll be a fencing plan that's coming up. It's really hard to see on this drawing. It's actually on a different sheet. But the fencing plan will come kind of up and around here and kind of come across this way, and it'll come back and tie into this building here. And so once school starts, in theory, you lock down the fence this way, you lock down the fence this way, and so any visitor coming in has to come in through these doors. So in the morning when students are coming, this big gate's open, students are parking here, parents are dropping off here, and everyone's kind of entering this way or entering maybe up through this way, however they choose or how the site actually decides to manage it. But once the bell rings, all of this gets locked down, and any visitor must come through this building to get onto campus.
Mr. Palazzo, the pink pathway there, I assume that's going to be set up also as a fire road if mm-hmm. necessary?
Yeah, okay. That's kind of hence the red color. It's intended as a fire road. It'll be access road for maintenance, et cetera, but the intent is to start to limit day-to-day traffic going this way so that, you know, staff and our service coming to the cafeteria multipurpose room can kind of not be impeded. They'll come in through that western entrance, as well as anyone coming to the pool. If there's community use, you know, during the day for the pool, they can use that west entrance, and they won't be parking here and traversing all the way through our campus. It's kind of trying to direct people and force people to use the appropriate entrance for the function that they're going to the site for. And then assist with security. So we can go to the floor plan. If you could, Kim, next page. That's a little hard to read. Is there any way to zoom up a little bit on that? Again, these are huge files, so the challenge is... That's probably pretty good. Okay, so again, the parking lot was over here. This is that front entrance. So as you enter the building, you'll be greeted with a receptionist right in this area here, which will be handled with furniture, which is why you're not seeing it on a drawing. It'll be placed after. The student side, counselors, athletics, ASB, nurse's office, registrar, attendance will all be on that wing. So that as students are coming in potentially late, they can come in through this entrance, go to either of those folks in attendance, registrar, et cetera, and go right into campus. This will kind of be the staff support side, so teachers' lounge, offices here, staff restrooms, and then the career center right off of the front entrance here. So again, teachers can come in, get their mail, get whatever things they need in the morning, and then go right out to campus. And then the only administrative side, if you will, where the principals sit, are these four wings up here, and then including this one here. So you've got principal's office, two APs, a conference room, and then the remainder of these are kind of open offices for other student support activities, counselors, SROs, et cetera. So the bulk of what goes on in here is student-focused. Really the only administrative component is back here. And the goal for students is never to go back here, right? So, with that, if we could scroll down, if you would, Kim. The nice thing is this spine is all daylit. This is a lot of daylighting going on in this building. So, again, we don't have to have the lights on in there all the time. The nice thing is, you know, it's not as hot, bright, and sunny sometimes in Morro Bay, so you get a nice diffuse light, but it's not, you know, so you're not having to pull the blinds all the time and turn the lights on. You can use the natural daylighting. A lot of the materials on this are aluminum, concrete, stucco, all of our materials that are much more suited for the marine environment as opposed to what we're doing in the city. If we could scroll back to that, please. If the question was where the student support building is about where the multipurpose room is. If we could scroll over just a bit. The multipurpose room is right here.
Okay, so it's sort of in front. Okay.
Yeah, this is the big lawn.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I was trying to orient. That's okay.
No problem. Okay. So... That
so, Mr.
is,
Palazzo.
Yes.
You are seeking approvals?
Seeking approvals of these two projects as submitted to DSA. This one in today, J-Wing has been in for 2 weeks. So, again, J-Wing is anticipated to start review at DSA November 17th. Hopefully within a week or two I'll have the schedule on when they'll start. This one probably closer to early December. But I'm still optimistic that both projects will roughly come out of DSA about the same time and we'll put them out to bid as soon as possible.
I move approval of the approval as you're asking for the new student support services building at Morro Bay High School as well as the redo of the J-Wing.
I second that.
So I have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Questberry. All in favor?
We're good.
Aye.
Oh, aye.
Did you have a comment, Mr. Buckman?
I will be making it, hopefully,
okay.
In a second.
An aye from me, too.
Thanks.
Okay.
We're doing a tag team here.
Those opposed? That passes 7-0. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. Anthony, I just have a quick question because you did mention the windows at San Luis High,
mm-hmm.
and getting natural light, and we're talking about a lot of windows here. You know, I'm kind of a energy guy. So it help me if I'm wrong. DSA checks for energy use
we're subject to being in compliance with Title 24 Energy Code,
okay.
Which has become what now we've got what they call the California Green Code. So these buildings are all subject to that code. So we can opt into that review, or we'll work with our engineers to show compliance. And if you look in the drawings, there are all what we call the Title 24 sheets, even though Title 24 is the entire code. But the Title 24 sheets are in there showing all the energy compliance with the current California Green Code. So we had to do a lot of interesting things in the J-Wing in terms of insulation and finishes and not adding as much more glass. We had kind of had ideas to glaze that whole thing up, and it wasn't calculating. So we took a lot of some of the glazing out, but we were able to leave the skylights in, which helps.
And so when you
Title 24 energy compliance.
Is there like a scale? I mean, you could do, oh, you did the minimum, but oh, you really did a great job.
yeah. There's kind of all the different broad spectrums. I think we hit it right down the middle of the fairway. Didn't try to go for the green, but we're definitely hitting. And that new Title 24 code is much more stringent than our previous energy codes. So we're doing a lot of different things. We're doing landscape reviews even in terms of water use, etc. They're really starting to get more into that as part of the code, and rightfully so. I mean, it's they're all limited resources that we do have. So, all right.
Okay, then we will. Are we returning tomorrow to San Luis Obispo High School?
No, I think that's
we're done.
It.
Okay. Measure D, ratification of change orders, and that would be Mr. Pinkerton or Mr. Palazzo.
Take it, Mr.
Like
Palazzo.
I'll go ahead and take it. So what we have tonight is change order one for the annex demolition and tank removal project. We had put those kind of two projects together. When we got out to the annex, there was an existing fire sprinkler line that was out there, and basically they couldn't get a valve shut off. to turn the water off to the building to be able to disconnect the line, cap it, and tear the building down. So we would, if we'd have started knocking the building down, we'd had fire sprinkler water going everywhere. So they tried to turn the valve off, couldn't. Had to shut the campus down to be able to fix that, so we kind of had to do that work after hours around the student schedule that was happening over the summer. And so this is the time and the money, et cetera, required to basically shut the campus down, replace that valve, snip the line. Well, the snipping the line was part of the contract, but basically allow them to then snip the line so that they could tear the annex down safely and not have water going everywhere. So fairly straightforward.
Okay. Seeking approval.
Seeking approval on this evening.
Mr. Millar.
What the unauthorized contingency remaining line at the bottom with the $18,639.06, I think it's the contingency part that's built into our agreements?
Yes. Several of our agreements had a 10% contingency over base bid. So if your project was 200 and this would have been,
make it easy,
trying to do the math, 200,000, you would have had a $20,000 contingency.
And
so
this is depleted by the amount of,
right,
the engineering change order.
Correct.
It. Thank you.
So in essence, assuming everything shakes out with this, we will get basically an $18,000 change order back to us, zeroing out that whatever remaining contingency there is at a future board meeting.
Okay. I'll move approval of engineering change order 1 as described.
I have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0.
Okay. Thank you much.
Thank you. Okay. 8.06, the district's initial proposal, 8.05, the initial proposal from CSEA.
So these next four items are all related to negotiations, and the law says that that both the district, on behalf of the board, and the association or the union has to put forth the things that they're interested in negotiating, which articles of the contract, before we actually sit down and negotiate. So the first item that you're going to see here is a letter that has been written by CSEA to me saying that these are the two items that they'd like to discuss during negotiations. And then this will appear also on November 15th's agenda for you to accept it formally. It also gives the opportunity for the public to weigh in on any one of these four items during public hearings. So they have 2 weeks to kind of look this information over. So no action is required. This is just the first
thank
of the
you.
Four
so
items.
You are presenting the sunshine, the initial proposal from CSEA.
Yes. And then the next item, because each one of these is just informational. The next, are you ready for the next one?
I am.
Madam President. Mm-hmm. The next item is our initial proposal from you as the board to start the negotiations process with CSEA, and the three items that we're interested in discussing during negotiations, which are the leaves article, fringe benefits, and pay and allowances.
Thank you.
The next item is from SEIU, and this is the Sunshine Letter that has been written by Daryl Scheck, the field representative of SEIU, and these are the interests that SEIU would like to bring up when they negotiate at the table, and they have three items: increased premium contributions for dependent health care coverage, vacation language, and optical and dental benefits and retirement. These are the three items that they would like to discuss when we get together for negotiations. And the fourth item is the board's initial proposal to SEIU, and that is the two articles of hours of employment and pay and allowances.
Thank you. So these items are all sunshine.
They will all appear in 2 weeks for public comment, so the public can weigh in on any of these. Typically, There's usually not public to weigh in, but if there is, they can come and weigh in at the public comment time on November 15th at the board meeting at Del Mar, and then all of them will be officially adopted by you as the board or accepted in the case of the CSEA and SEIU agreements.
And they are included in the agenda materials. So if anyone from the public would like to be refreshed on what the Sunshine items are, they can be found there, and they
and then they'll appear again in November.
Join us November 15th to discuss them if they care to. Okay,
yes.
Thank you very
okay.
much. Item 8.09 is the nomination to County Committee on School District Organization. Dr. Prater.
Yes, the County Committee for School District Organization is especially important as they manage or adjudicate territory transfers. And in our case, this is a very important committee. We have one of our representatives is Will Jones, and there are two vacancies on the countywide committee, and we're quite fortunate to have Linda Quesenberry submit interest in her nomination for this committee. And as you know, discussions around Cayucas and Coast and the issues that impact us would fall on this committee. So I'm putting this decision in front of you for the nomination of Linda Quesenberry.
Mr. Quesenberry.
I'm going to step out and let you folks decide this.
Okay. Well, I don't see any other board comments, so I'd like to comment on this. Independent of Jim Quesenberry, Linda Villanueva Quesenberry is a very accomplished person in her own right, in terms of being active among various groups, working with English language learners, people in poverty. She is active all over the county, working in behalf of those in need, and I think she has been recognized as a Citizen of the Year in Paso Robles. So I think she's highly qualified to serve on this board, and I'm delighted that she is expressed an interest in doing so. I'm delighted to nominate Linda Villanueva Quesenberry to as our representative to the SLO County Committee on School District Organization. I'm seeking a second. Okay, nomination by myself, second by Mr. Unger. Those in favor? Aye. Opposed? So we have 6 ayes, none opposed, and 1 abstention, Mr. Quesenberry. Okay, somebody drag Jim back in.
Okay.
I think that they, Amy just went to get him. He may choose to pull an item, Walter. We can cry softly. You could cry softly. Okay, well, we have decided not to wait for Mr. Quesenberry to rejoin us, and we are moving on to the action consent with the understanding that should there be an item that he cares to discuss, if he was absent for this, we'll revisit it. Please let me know if you'd like anything to be pulled. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, acceptance of donations. 9.03, approval of warrants and payroll. 9.04, approval of purchase orders and Cal cards. Item 9.05, approval of furniture and equipment requests. So I'm seeking approval of items 9.01, 02, and 05.
I'll move approval of items 9.01, 9.02, and 9.05.
And I'll second. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by myself. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Mr. Millar?
03 and 04 I pulled because I have to abstain.
Okay. I'm seeking approval then of items 9.03 and 9.04.
I'll make that motion.
Mr. Buckman?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? We have 6 in favor, none opposed, and Mr. Millar abstains. Do we have any items for advanced agenda? Seeing none, then we'll move to board reports.
Bye, Walter.
Okay, let's see. I'm going to go. Why don't I start with you, Mr. Unger, followed by Mr. Questenberry, followed by Mr. Buckman.
Thank you.
So Friday evening, I went to the Baywood Carnival, and there were a lot of people there in spite of what we were concerned about the weather, because it had just stopped raining, but it was a flood of people, not a flood of water. Teachers were all there. It was really great. They had something called the Vulture's Nest, and so a teacher, it was kind of like capture the flag, sort of, you know, if a teacher was chosen, they had to go sit in the Vulture's Nest until one of their kids pulled them out. They had a great silent auction. I don't think we won anything, but it was really quite a great little carnival. And then I tried to go to the Area 55 at the middle school, and I got there about 20 after 6, and there must have been 100 people in line just to get in. So it was probably the line was out in the parking lot. So I couldn't go this year, but I'm going to try to get next year. It had a great talk actually this afternoon or this morning with Mr. Illig, Mr. Bloom, and Mr. Wilcox about some things we're going to be doing at CSBA and just the great school collaboration with the Area 55. It's really exciting what they're doing there. Visited Pacific Beach. I was last meeting. I was in Fresno County. I participated in the closed session, but I was at Carruthers High School, which is a small high school in the Central Valley. They just completed a bond program there that focused on their ag stuff, and they're doing a really exciting medical academy in conjunction with UCSF. Really some really, really cool stuff. So it's been a pretty cool week, a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Mr. Questenberry.
Well, I had the opportunity to go to the DLAC meeting, and I was very impressed by the turnout of the parents. 20 years makes a huge difference, and a lot of hard work on the part of Amy Shields and Don Addis and so forth to get those parents out. I was very impressed with both Don Addis' bilingual skills and Amy Shields. So it was one of the most enjoyable and encouraging things I've seen in this district in a while. And the involvement of the parents, I think they really benefited from going to the Cabe concert. The Cabe conference. There was a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of folks reporting very positive things from their various school sites. So it was wonderful. Also, Mark, Catherine, Dr. Prater, we all had the chance to go to the classified employee recognition dinner. And again, that was marvelous. And it was marvelous to see one of our own, Lisa Chan, be honored, and that's about it. I also went to a wedding of one of my former students. I must say it was great to go. Humberto Gonzalez got married to his bride, and I met probably 10 of my former ESL students there. They're all doing quite well. Many of them have children in our schools. Baywood seems to have at least three or four of their children. Anyway, and I see Principal Donnelly back there. And it was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. So I was able to attend the first public hearing on the Diablo Canyon. And I have to say that went in a little shaky because we were having a lot of public comment. And I have to say it was insightful. The public was thoughtful and positive. And it was more like a concept of, okay, we get this, and we need to move forward, and we're going to make the best out of this. And it was really a positive experience. It really, really was. And then I just want to tag on to Jim's because we talk about the classified employees, and so often we forget. Classified employees are 99% of the time the first people that our children see and the last person that they see during the school day. And so they make a tremendous impact on the school climate and on this district.
Thank you. Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Mr. Quisenberry and Mr. Millar and I visited Del Mar last week. And it occurred to me when I heard Don Addis's presentation that we saw beautiful examples of the language-rich curriculum with embedded support there. I didn't know at the time that's what we were seeing. So now, in retrospect, I'm imagining in these classrooms we saw large, beautiful displays of wording, of how to ask a question or how to respond to a question. And we saw examples repeatedly of the teachers using that language and then students modeling the teachers using that language, students who are EL learners and students who are English learners. And so that really brought that home for me. So thank you, Don. I'm delighted to see that that's working so well in our classrooms.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Just to beg your indulgence, I just want to mention that the Teacher of the Year and the Classified Employee of the Year celebrations put on by the county, Jim Brescia, I wanted to praise him for how wonderful these are. I think they're better than ever, and I want to make sure that Dr. Prater tells Jim that those of us who have been there, I think we would all agree. Yes? Yeah. Wonderful.
Red carpet treatment.
I just have a brief report on a visit to Del Mar three weeks ago, and I wanted to commend Delmar's good too, but Monarch Grove, because they're doing a wonderful job teaching kids about safety. Because a couple of us walked into, I believe, a first grade classroom, a couple little kids working on the floor, they turn around and look at us and start going, "Stranger danger, stranger danger." So yes. Well done.
All right, then. If there's no additional comment, the board will our next regularly scheduled meeting is November 15th, and this meeting is adjourned.